Why so serious?
All the toys, all the time.
I am the game, and still getting trying to play dude.
You know the rules. This isn't a toy.
But we bought it at the toy store.
We did, but the way I'm using it makes it an adult thing.
Are you ready to play the game?
Yeah! Welcome to the toy department with Matt Kolsky and Derek Madden.
Yeah, yeah.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, it is time for the toy department. I'm Derek Madden. He's Matt Kolsky. We were talking in the pre-show meeting about the very 2020 predicaments we're in right now, which is basically that neither of us, we're both tired all the time.
Yep.
Despite never going anywhere, we're tired all the time. I think that mine may be psychosomatic in that I have I'm just tired, and then tired immediately becomes in this paranoid calculation of, am I tired because I have the Rona?
Yep.
And that does not feel great to be thinking about that, you know. But that's where
we're
at.
Good.
2020.
Yeah, that's where we're at. It's
probably 2021 if we're being honest.
Yeah. Yeah, at least part of it. It's not great. Not where we want to be. I also think I have a pinched nerve. Life's been better.
So, because of our 2020 predicaments, we're going to attempt to do a short show. And I know we say that all the time and fail miserably pretty much all the time.
Yeah.
But I think this is the week. I really mean it this week, and I think we can do it.
It's unbelievable.
And I'm that confident that I'm willing to spit in the face of
again.
All the jinxing of data that I've done.
Again.
Yes, correct. Correct.
Yet again. All right, let's see, because, you know. I mean, look, whoever's listening to this already knows. They can see how long the episode is. So they're either congratulating you or laughing at you right now.
It's true. It's so great. You kind of forget about that part, right?
Yeah.
They already know whether we're right or wrong. Okay. Before we start, should I go with a cold brew to try to
It's gonna be a really going? Quick episode. Now, before we get into anything, let me take a quick detour.
I need to figure out the right beverage for this.
I am drinking cold brew coffee, if that gives you any sort of idea of how to handle it. But I will also point out that you are 2 hours later in the day than me, and I have a whole radio show to do in front of me. So I need to get myself jacked up for an extended period.
I probably should have mentioned I've also already had one cold brew coffee.
Yeah, maybe like a nice seltzer water is a better choice.
Yeah, I think we're gonna stick with water. Okay, I'm ready to jump into it. Should we start with the entertainment?
Hold
stuff
on, before we start, are you more of a still or a sparkling water guy?
you're just trying to kill the short show gambit right out of the bat.
I mean, I'm curious. I'm legitimately curious.
I actually have thoughts on this. I used to be a hardcore
yep.
still only.
Yep.
And one of the offshoots of the 2020 pandemic is that I've kind of gotten into sparkling.
Wow, it took you the pandemic. Okay, so for me, it happened like 3 or 4 years ago. I would say somewhere around the age of 35, I was like, wait a second. This sparkling water is all bubbly and nice in my throat. I think I like it all of a sudden. And now I literally drink 6 to 10 cans of bubbly water a day.
Are you into the LaCroix?
I'm off LaCroix. And I am on mostly bubbly, which is like BUBLY. Because I really think they're like, you know, light sugar-free fruit flavoring is the best. But I also just recently discovered this AHA brand that's, I think it's a Coca-Cola thing, but it's mostly crappy, but it does have this one like citrus and green tea with caffeine seltzer that I like because it has a little caffeine and sometimes I want that.
Okay, and so you're drinking almost exclusively flavored waters.
Yeah, but like if I go to a restaurant now and they're like, sir, would you, first of all, I rarely go to a restaurant where they say this, but if I did and they were like, sir, would you like still or sparkling, I would take sparkling now. When gotcha. For the first 35 years of my life, I would have been like, ew, give me normal water.
Please, water. Yes. Yeah. Now, I'm still generally still at the restaurant, but I drink plain mineral water a lot, and my brand of choice is Topo Chico.
Oh, Topo Chico is wonderful. No, absolutely.
Love the Topo Chico.
Nice little glass bottle of Topo Chico. Absolutely yeah. delicious.
And you can get you can buy them by the case at Whole Foods, but basically only at Whole Foods, at least here. So when they're out, then I have real problems. So
yeah.
Stop the Whole Foods for Topo Chico cases.
I feel like, do you have a Costco?
We do have a Costco.
Are you sure they don't have it? Because I feel like I've seen it at our Costco. You should check.
I'm not actually a Costco member, but I do get my drugs there, my prescription drugs. So I
interesting.
So I'm in there. I haven't seen it, but I'm going to look next time I'm there. And then I guess I'll be forced to buy a membership.
Might be worth it for the savings over Whole Foods on Topo Chico alone, to be honest with you.
Agreed. all right. So do you want to start with sports, or should we start with the entertainment stuff?
Let's go entertainment first, because then, you know, the sports, if the sports drag on, we can just cut ourselves off.
Oh, there's no way the sports is dragging on today, sir.
Wow. Okay.
All right. I don't know why I'm still confident. We spent 10 minutes talking about mineral water. all right. Let's talk about Lovecraft Country, which was the big television debut. This week, obviously, lovely pedigree in the show, interesting high concept, which is sort of like, what's the way to describe this?
How about, let me start with this. What was your level of familiarity with H.P. Lovecraft coming in?
So I have some familiarity based on, True Detective season one was, such a thing, and Lovecraft was such a big influence that people cited that I kind of looked into it a little bit then.
Okay.
And then prior to this, I read some more articles about Lovecraft, the guy, and, how he was turned out to be a virulent racist.
Oh, was he? I didn't even see that. I just knew he was weird.
Yeah, no. He has written a lot of horrible stuff about race, in fact.
Well, that's funny then that, or maybe that's the point.
It's part of the point, yeah.
Yeah, but, so all I know about H.P. Lovecraft is, like, he's one of the early sci-fi, and more than sci-fi, just, like, weird, whacked-out fi, like, psychotic fiction, for lack of a better word. And then I knew that this show had been sort of characterized as horror. And I have to say, episode one was not so horrific. And it was, in my opinion, excellent TV. I mean, excellent. The acting, the writing is A+, and it looks amazing, and it's so weird, and I have no idea where it's going or if I'm going to be totally scared off at some point in the middle of the season. But for now, I'm all in.
Mm. Lovecraft, I guess, is he's one of the most influential sci-fi and horror writers, period. But, huge influence on Stephen King, if that gives you sort of an an idea of the vibe. And it's,
But it's more, I don't know what to compare. It's very unique. I don't know what to compare the vibe to, but it's not like it Stephen King or, even The Shining Stephen King. In terms of scariness, it's mostly just weird and
it's
dark.
The outsider Stephen King, right?
Yeah,
it's
like there you go. It's more the outsider. Dread. existential dread, the occasional flash of a monster, but mostly, honestly, I saw somebody tweet, the racists are scarier than the monsters, and it's not wrong.
Yeah, well, that's the point, right?
Right.
Like, at least I think that's one of the things the show's trying to do, is show you that the, you know, the garden variety racism is just as evil a monster as the monster in and they're, you know, they're, you know, I think not unintentionally, you know, they're the, in sort of the climactic scenes of this episode, they're really battling both, right?
Yep.
So you know, simultaneously, I would describe this almost as sort of like a love child of you know, any kind of Stephen King or Lovecraft sort of show with a mix of like Django Unchained and like 12 Years a Slave, a little bit, you know what I mean? Where it, and what I mean by those last two are it's fantastical in the way that sort of Django is kind of fantastical about the horrors that are happening. But it also really takes the time to sort of give you the day-to-day lived in the experience of oppression in a way that's plain and real and relatable. And for me, made me uncomfortable. Like, I didn't love spending time watching this show, which is not to say it's not good. It just was painful. It was painful for me to watch these people be treated like this.
Yeah.
So, you know, I was talking to my mom. I think I've told this story maybe on the pod before, about a trip that I was supposed to be taking this summer to a convention in Louisville. And I was going to go, my great grandparents are buried there. And I was going to go, you know, I was talking to her about checking up on the graves, and I was asking her about when she lived in Louisville, if she was anywhere near the hotel that I was going to be staying at. And my mom was kind of like, you know, just sort of like, no, we weren't allowed downtown. When I lived there. And this is right. This is one generation removed from me.
Right.
You know, and you know, to it when you go back into that time and you realize that this is like people are, you know, who are living now have lived through this, and you just see sort of how casual and ingrained it is to people. And like, I don't know, it was tough for me. So you know, and I don't fault the show for that in any way. I mean, I think that's a sign of how effective it is. But it's it was not an easy hour in change to watch.
I wonder how you know, obviously that the whole scene when they're parked at the side of the road and the cop comes and then chases them is particularly upsetting in the vein that you're talking about.
Yeah.
So I wonder how much of that continue. I guess the question remains, which of the sort of monstrous things are the most leaned into, I guess.
Yeah. And I think even right, like there, that's a scene. It's almost like where you sort of see the monster of racism, but you know, there are other scenes like when the bus breaks down. And you see them getting, you know, you see all the white people getting loaded up on the truck, and you're like, oh man, they're not going to let these guys on the truck.
Right.
And they don't actually show that conversation that you're sort of, right? They just cut to them walking down the road.
Well, part of the message clearly, right, is these weren't things that really had much of a conversation at this time.
Right. Yeah.
It wasn't like the black folks could make an appeal and maybe get a ride. Like, they knew they weren't getting a ride, so they started walking.
Yeah. And that's, to me, was equally uncomfortable. You know what I mean?
Sure.
So, you know, the conceit, I think, is super interesting. The execution is super interesting. I have nothing bad to say about the show, but tough hang for me at times. In the way that 12 Years a Slave was. Like, Brilliant movie. Almost had to leave.
I imagine you plan to continue watching it, though, right?
I do. All yeah. Right.
Well, I think actually even more so than I thought before the podcast now, it'll be interesting to check in on this next week because, I mean, look, that stuff makes me uncomfortable too, but obviously not in the same way it does with you and not to the extent. And so I'm interested to see, based on how the show moves forward, because, like, there's a lot to mine here, whether or not they – you know, constantly make the overt point of the racism. And even if they don't do that, there's the specter of the racism of the time hanging over the show, no matter what they do. So, at the risk of sounding like I want to treat you like our lab rat, I am interested in how you react as it goes on.
Yeah, sure. I'm willing to do that. And that, you know, of course, then there's also just getting into how relatable this is to our current world. This is another difficult thing to think about.
Yeah, it's incredibly relatable. I'm sure you noticed that the titular Green Book of the controversial Oscar winner is the job of Courtney B. Vance in Lovecraft Country.
Yeah.
You know, they don't call it the Green Book, but they call it, what, like the travel guide or something?
Safe Negroes. Isn't it Safe Negro Travel Guide, I think is what it's called?
Right. So, okay. So then, like, that could clearly be slanged as the Green Book. Like, it's clearly same book, right? And it
and
may
it
even
green,
be
green.
Yeah, I think it was. So that's a cultural touchstone, undoubtedly.
Yeah. Oh, man. Before we jump out of this, I did also want to shout out to Jussie Smollett. Did Jussie say Journey Smollett?
That's it. I did the same thing this morning. My dad was like, "Who is she? She's so good." And I was like, "It's Jussie." No, wait.
The whole Jussie Smollett thing pisses me off those two names are now connected. You know what I mean? Yep. And like,
and if
I should
he
had just be able to appreciate Journey Smollett on her own.
That's right. And if he was just Justin, it wouldn't be so hard.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. You know what I mean?
It's not like we'd be going Justine. No, we'd be like Journey. It's a different person,
but it's
Jussie
so close,
Journey
yeah.
is so, yeah. Anyway, I gotta say, between her and I sinfully don't know the lead actor's name. I just know he was the star of The Last Black Man in San Francisco. But Courtney B. Vance has been one of my favorite actors forever. So I was glad that he was in both of the new things we watched this week. But I think, you know, but obviously over his career, but particularly when you look at these two things, he's just such a good actor. He can do so many different things.
Yeah, you're right. Jonathan Majors is the name of the lead
Jonathan
actor.
Majors.
Jonathan Majors, yeah. Johnny Majors.
He's excellent, man. And speaking of doing different things, he was so convincing in The Last Black Man of San Francisco that, having never seen him before, I wondered if, like, that was just sort of how, like, some of the mannerisms and qualities of that character were just sort of who he was. And that's not the case at all.
Yeah.
He's just a remarkable actor. Yeah. Like, watching Lovecraft Country made me appreciate how good he was in The Last Black Man in San Francisco all over again.
I don't know if you caught this episode of Real Sports, but there's a really interesting profile of Nnamdi Asamoah's acting career, which I had no idea was quite as accomplished as it's starting to be. Uh-huh. Like, dude's doing Broadway shows and stuff.
Really?
We're checking out, by the way, if you get a chance to watch Real Sports. All right, should we talk about the other Courtney B. Vance thing?
Yes, I think that's the other thing we have to talk about.
I feel like this is almost sort of like of a piece with the Charlize Theron movie we watched a couple of weeks ago, whose name is now escaping me.
Wait, hold on. Can I rewind for a second? Why did you?
Yeah.
Why did you bring up Namdi Asomugha?
I don't know. I was just thinking about because Namdi Asomugha in this play reminded me a lot of Johnny Majors.
Wait, you saw a play with Namdi Asomugha in it?
In the story, there's a lot of shots of him in this play. And he plays a soldier, and he's wearing the glasses, and they're just, you know what I mean? Like, a lot of similar looks.
I Googled to make sure he wasn't in this, and I missed it somehow, because I was like, what just happened?
I don't know. So you're right. Sorry, that's my brain. I was thinking about, like, huh, I wonder if Namdi Asomugha is going to be, like, the next guy like this.
To be fair.
Sensitive black dude roles.
Derek warned us before the show that he was exhausted and considering his second cold brew coffee of the day. So a little bit of a non sequitur is not that big of a deal. And I think that we can now move on to Project Power, which I want to bring this up. Let me ask you a question, because I don't know if you caught this, but what is your feeling in general when a not entirely serious, but also not comedy movie explicitly, I don't know if it's breaking the fourth wall exactly, but explicitly references something from the real world that is not part of the movie world as like a clever quip?
Do you
know what I'm referring to?
I do not know what you're referring to, but I'm still going to answer the question. I would like a movie like this, a movie that is a B movie, to be self-aware.
You know what I mean?
Like,
yeah.
So I generally enjoy that, and I do think this is a movie that knows it's aiming low, and trying to deliver on that.
Okay. See, I would say it's not as aware of that as I would like it to be, except for the one moment. And I shouldn't say that, except for a handful of moments. I'm not sure this movie, I don't want to say made enough fun of itself, but that's kind of what I want to say. It doesn't need to be silly making fun of itself all the time, but I'm not sure there was enough, especially given the ending, and we won't spoil it yet, at least, other than for me to say, I generally expect a pretty silly, a B movie might be harsh, but like an action flick, you know, not a serious film, an action flick. I rarely expect it to come together in the end, in like the most well wrapped up, sensible way, okay? Especially when there's some supernatural style elements to what's happening. But they did not try very hard at all on the ending of this movie. And the moment I'm talking about is not the ending. This, I guess, is a slight spoiler of a joke, but it's a weird joke enough that I feel like it has to be mentioned. When they are sort of towards the end and Joseph Gordon-Levitt is what's the young woman's name? She has an interesting name. Project Power.
You're talking about you're talking about the main girl.
Dominique Fishback from The Deuce.
Yes, from The Deuce. Very hard for me, by the way.
Not to think of her as a high school student when you've seen her play like a prostitute.
Yes.
Yeah.
I mean, I know that the character in The Deuce is probably only slightly older.
Maybe not older at all, if you think that
maybe not
she's like
that,
18,
right.
You know.
I remember from the story, right, she moved from North Carolina when she was like 15, right?
Right.
Like, wasn't that part of the So
pretty much the same age, but no, I agree. That was a little hard for me too. But the scene is Joseph Gordon-Levitt and she, like, they're about to head into the climax of the movie, and he says to her, you know, stay here, you're the lookout. And she's like, the lookout, like, you know, that's a BS job, basically. And he's like, no, the lookout is an important role. And, you know, that was a big role for Joseph Gordon-Levitt in The Lookout.
Oh, I did not catch that at all. Yeah, that went completely over my head.
But yeah, and I think it went over most people's heads, I would imagine, because The Lookout was kind of an indie movie, but it was also kind of a big breakout for him from like a, he's not just the little kid in, the long-haired kid in 30 Rock. Yeah. He's like, he can carry a heavy film himself playing like a slightly disabled guy with a brain injury, you know? It was a big deal. and widely appreciated. So, that was such a weird moment. And there were maybe three or four other less extreme, because again, like, referencing the real world outside the movie about the actor who's playing a character is like very meta and entirely
that's
silly, you know?
Yeah.
But like the silliest meta of all. So I don't know. There were like four or five moments of sort of like not slapstick per se, but like that level of humor that jumped into like a kind of serious action movie in a weird way. So the tone of it was weird. I liked it basically, though. You know, this is not a great movie, but it was a pretty good time. Jamie Foxx is a delight. Joseph Gordon-Levitt's always fun.
I mean, you wonder what he's doing in this movie. I mean, honestly, both of them, really. Like,
well, especially, what are they doing in this movie? I would say especially Joseph Gordon-Levitt, though, because, like, he's not working that much.
Yeah, he intentionally took some time off.
He has, like...
But he's got three movies this year, so I guess that time off ended. So.
Yeah, but he's working little enough. And he had a phase, right, where he'd, like, it seemed like he was saying yes to everything, and there were definitely some misses in there. You know, he's in 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 movies in 2010, and Inception is one of them, but I do not recognize any of the other ones. So, you know, he was in G.I. Joe, The Rise of Cobra a few months after he was in 500 Days of Summer. Like, he was doing everything. So it does seem like he's trying to be more selective. And I agree, this is kind of a weird choice, just in that there's not a ton to it. It's not elevated really in any way, but like, it's enjoyable in the same way a Fast and Furious movie is enjoyable, or, you know, another action thing.
Yeah. So it's funny that you mentioned that, because I finally watched my second Fast and Furious movie over the weekend.
Really?
I guess it's technically not a Fast and Furious movie. I watched Hobbs and Shaw.
Oh no, it's in the universe, man. That counts.
Okay, that counts. Why are they so long? That would be like that. A Fast and Furious movie should be 90 minutes. No, am I crazy?
Yeah, I have to be honest. I don't know what that is. And I don't know if that is because they have found that that's what their core audience wants. Or if it's just self-indulgence.
But just because they can, you know what I mean?
But yeah, I'm kind of with you. Oh my goodness. Okay. Sorry. Big news for my regular job.
Okay. Do you want to, I feel like you got to share that now.
It's just sports news. It's not my job news. It's sports news. The Giants are calling up Joey Bart.
Oh, I could say that would be big news for your job.
Yep.
Okay. All right, it's probably a good time to jump into a quick baseball conversation, actually, if you don't mind.
I think that's right.
Because we had an exciting young prospect in the game.
Speaking of exciting young prospects, here's how baseball tries to mess them up.
So, you know, obviously there was a lot of controversy. Fernando Tatis Jr. hit a grand slam this week on a 3-0 count when the Padres were winning by 7 runs, I think it was, if I have
six,
that correct.
6, maybe, I don't know.
6?
6 or 7.
6. They were up a substantial amount, but not an insane amount.
Correct.
And the hit the grand slam against the Texas Rangers, and their manager took exception to it. And, you know, so then that started a few days of controversy. We've talked about this subject before. Virtually all of baseball's unwritten rules are stupid, right? They're dumb. And there's a reason that they're not written down.
That's right.
Like, that's
because they're dumb.
That's a basic point that we can agree on, right?
Yep.
To me, the thing that I think is exciting is that I feel like that opinion is now the generally accepted opinion, right?
Yeah,
to me is a shift.
I wonder about that, because sometimes I've come to believe that sometimes we think something is a commonly held opinion because we see it on TV shows and Twitter, and it turns out that actually the real majority of people feel a different way. And I do wonder about that in this case. And what's frustrating is, even if you're right, even if the vast majority opinion is like, let these guys show some flair, because first of all, like, the notion that they shouldn't is very old and silly. And second, it's exciting. We're talking about the most exciting young players in the game. You know, some of the guys on my White Sox team, Tim Anderson, like, you don't want this guy, the AL batting champ, to flip his bat when he cranks a homer? Like, screw you. And same thing, honestly, if pitchers want to celebrate, and by the way, pitchers have been celebrating nonsense for years, and, you know, most of them don't ever go to the plate, so they don't have to worry about getting thrown at. Which, by the way, throwing near a guy's head, which I think we now know is risking his life, is the worst thing. It's the worst thing. And what's frustrating, as I started to say before I got distracted by how annoying this all is, the worst thing is that even if you're right that the majority opinion is let them play, let them have fun, the guys who are making the decisions in the game are the holdouts. So these idiot managers are policing fun. They're the fun police.
Yeah. Yeah, they sure are. All right, because they're the old school baseball men. And I do.
And some of them are like 47. Chill, bro.
I know. That's the worst part. I do think that this thing is going to sort of evolve like the Sats debate sort of did, right? Where it was like, this is a thing that, you know, people saw before people in the game saw. But the people seeing it was just a precursor to eventually these things that were really fought against by the old school guys eventually being adopted. And I look at my team, which I think was on the vanguard of the fun police for many years.
And it's flipped.
And it's flipped right now. Yep. They're the Ronald Acuna, Ozzie Albies.
Totally.
Dansby Swanson. Let's jump around and have fun, guys.
Yep.
And I just think you'll see more of that because MLB, I think MLB gets it. I think MLB gets it. They need to market these guys. And one
Maybe.
Of the best ways to market them is showing them having a good time.
Yep.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, they seem to get it more than they ever have before in terms of marketing the young players. So fingers crossed. I mean, it's not like he had any punishment from the league. His idiot manager made him apologize, which is just – I want him to shove it up his ass so hard. Like, Jace Tingler, take your porn name and go home. I don't want to hear it. I just don't.
That is quite a porn name.
I don't, especially
quite a porn name.
When, like, it's the whatever sixth or seventh inning or whatever it is. Like, They were up six one or 6-0 the next day early on, and he stole a base, and then before you know it, it's 6-4. Like, this is what happens. Baseball is not 3-2 all the time. There's no honor in taking it easy on a pitcher because you're winning by too much, especially when it's 6 or 7 runs. That's not too much.
The idea that you would have plays on which you're not supposed to compete is just antithetical to professional sport.
It's stupid.
In any sport.
And
particularly in a game that has no clock.
Exactly. Right? Like, and, dude, and this is another great point that I saw made, is the same stupid idiots who want to tell you, well, baseball's the best because it has no clock. You can't put a pitch clock in. You can't do this. You can't speed up the game. How dare you? They're the same idiots who support this nonsense.
Yep. No,
you know? Well, a comeback can happen anytime. That's the romance of baseball. But, oh, God, don't you dare hit it if you're winning by six. Like, what the F? Because
then you're stepping on the romance.
I know. It's all so stupid. And,
well, look, I was happy to see baseball punish the Rangers manager.
Yes.
In this instance, and not punish Fernando Tatis. I feel like that is a step in the right direction.
Maybe. Yeah. Fingers crossed.
We'll see. All right, let's talk about a game with a clock.
Oh yeah.
and a game that had many games with a clock over the last couple of days.
So many games.
Are you in? To me, there is a March Madness vibe about this first round from the bubble. That is delightful.
It's amazing.
Just the 4 games a day thing is kind of, it's just the basketball buffet is delightful. And it's true,
best.
Honestly, whether the games are good or not, because some days the games have been really great and competitive and some days they haven't. But there's sort of something to see from basketball every day, and it's great.
Well, and there's sort of something to see from every game, even the ones that have been blowouts. Like the Jazz blowing out the Thunder, the Nuggets yesterday. That was interesting. The Mavericks, like, pretty much beating up the Clippers for most of the night. That was interesting.
It sure was.
And then you've had other games with remarkable buzzer beaters. There was an overtime game. I mean, this bubble playoff to start has had absolutely everything you want, with the exception of consistently high quality refereeing.
I'd say that's fair. Were you expecting consistently high quality refereeing? I was expecting the NBA refs.
Yeah,
you know what I mean.
It is what it is, I suppose. But it can be very frustrating, and but in particular the ejections, and some of the technical fouls in general. Like I feel like somebody should have talked to the refs. It's not necessarily their fault so much as the NBA's fault overall that, you know, they need to change the way certain things are called because they hear everything now.
So are you speaking specifically about the Porzingis ejection, or is this a larger trend to you?
I think it's a larger trend, but that's
good,
a great
I feel
example.
Like the Porzingis ejection, I think, was a tough break to me more than bad refereeing.
It is bad refereeing. I mean, that's the thing. The first technical was worse than the second one, but you got to know the situation. Like, Dick Pivetta.
But so does Kristaps Porzingis, right?
Yeah, but he didn't really do anything.
If you're going to play for a teammate, you got to know that you got a technical foul.
You're right.
You can't say he didn't do anything because he clearly was pushing people.
He pushed one guy who was already pushing the star player one time. Who was already pushing the star player on his team, and then he got held back and nothing happened. The whole thing was nothing. And in virtually every playoffs of my entire life, there are no technical fouls that come out of that. They clear it up, they get everyone separated, and they play on. And that just has to be the way you do it in the playoffs. Mm-hmm. Emotions are running high. You just – even from the NBA's perspective as a league, it's terrible for business to have Kristaps Porzingis thrown out of that game. It's terrible and stupid. And he did not do anything that required, even if you thought both technical fouls were reasonable, which I don't necessarily think, he clearly did not do anything behaviorally that required he no longer play in the game. So all
agreed,
you have is
but,
one of the five look, most important guys.
I come from soccer, but you adjust your behavior when you're on a yellow card.
There's 11 guys right? There's 11 guys on the pitch.
But going a man down in a elite level soccer game is a real problem. So
of course, but it's still different. And also soccer is a world in that respect where guys miss a game here or there all the time because of accumulated cards. So it's just very different. Like getting thrown out of a basketball game is a significant thing.
Yeah, getting thrown out of a soccer game is still a significant thing. Guys get suspended for accumulated yellow cards in the way that basketball players get suspended for accumulated fouls.
Right.
And of course, it happens, but like that's generally considered on the player when that happens, right? Like in soccer.
But if Messi got two soft yellows in a Champions League game, people would be furious. They would.
Yeah, people would be upset.
They would.
That's kind of what I think it is. Brazinga's got two soft yellows, you know?
Yeah, and it shouldn't happen.
Yeah.
That should not happen. It just shouldn't. And I know there were two different guys who called them, but if you're the second guy and you're reviewing it, this wasn't even a heat of the moment. You're watching it on video. You have to be able to say, all right, look, under normal circumstances in a regular season game, maybe we tee him up for that. But we're in the second half of an important playoff game in a, you know, the league is on display situation. Does the second best player on the Mavericks and one of the most exciting young talents in the game need to go to the locker room right now? Is that important
game? If you're saying do I think the refs could have used better judgment in that situation? Like, sure.
And
I also don't think that that's necessarily like
it's not egregious.
A major league issue that needs to be addressed.
Oh, but it is. It is because it is not because of one incident. It is because I feel like that has been a trend, not just with technicals, but with everything. We've had a very litigious start. It has been the one flaw, in my view, of what I've watched, is a lot of the games have struggled to find rhythm because of how much the whistle is getting blown. And I think that's a problem. I think that's a bigger problem than anything else they have going on right now.
Maybe.
I just think it's bad for selling the game. And it's a game that does great with its highlights on social media and not as good with its television show. And I think one of the things that could improve about the television show is if it was less litigious. Because if calls get missed, people will complain about it. But if the game is stopped and started over and over again, it's less entertaining.
Yeah, well, look, they need to fine-tune the review system, too. You know what I mean?
It takes forever. What are they doing over there?
Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, I understand this is a sports radio fix, you know, but like put a clock on it. And if you can't figure out, you know, what happened in the space of that clock, then it's not clear and obvious. And it should just stay with the call on the floor. Like you can fix it in 2 seconds.
Look,
you know what I mean?
That's one way. Here's another way that I think is better. And that, I think, works in every sport, in every situation. You get a guy. Every single umpire, referee, official crew is expanded by one human being. And that one human being sits in a room filled with television screens, all with different angles of all the spots on the field where big calls get made. All the bases, all at the hoops, every view of the basket. And when they see a ref blow a call, they buzz in. Because the real issue here is I know it's a foul at home. I know it's out of bounds at home. I know he's safe at home. And the guy on the field calling the game is wrong. That's what you got to solve. So all you need is someone watching it on TV. Now, you want that person to have more angles than the person on TV, you know, so they can quickly look at those plays. But there's no reason one replay official couldn't fix everything, get rid of every challenge system, get rid of all of that. And if it's too close to call, they buzz in, pause the game for 30 seconds while I see this real quick. That's it. That's all you need.
And, you know, they have that in college football, and it doesn't work great.
Yeah, well, they have an idiot doing it. They have to have better people doing it. And with football, like, this is a big problem with replay in general. Like, people do it wrong, so lots of folks want to say quit doing it. But that's not better. Just do it right.
Yeah, I agree with that. The idea of, like, let's not get the calls right or – human error is part of the game. It's just the dumbest.
Yeah, I love the human element. No, the human element is the players, you players, idiots.
Exactly. Right. The players fuck up. Let's just call us right.
Right. I love how people want to say, oh, so you probably want robot umpires. I would love robot umpires.
Me too.
It would be great. What are these guys supposed to do? They're supposed to call things by the rules and take their own personal emotion entirely out of it. Now, who would be good at that?
Like, seriously, can you think of just – I just put it this way. Can you think of one time that a human umpire has added to a game?
I mean, really only in the situation I was talking about earlier with, you know, things like technical fouls, right? I mean, there are some and in a sport like basketball where there's more nuance, in a sport like football – where, you know, you wouldn't necessarily – or you would have to redefine – right. No, I'm just saying – yeah, you'd have to redefine certain things about football and basketball to get robots to be able to do it. But in baseball, there's the human factor in umpires is a zero value add.
Right. Like, you're never like, thank God that ump was here.
Never.
Right? At best, it's like he did his job. Right? Yep. So you know, of course you'd want robot ups. All right. So I want to ask, you know, we talked about last week in these playoffs, right? I mean, we spent a lot of time talking about whether we felt like the Lakers, Clippers, and Bucks were still the teams to beat. As we have this conversation, those teams are combined. Is it what, 2-4? Is that right?
Well, they've all been beaten. Yeah, they've each lost once. They're 2-3 because the Magic Bucks game 2 is after our recording time today.
Yeah. So does that change anything for you? I still think each of those teams is going to advance out of this round, and we're not going to be thinking about these losses too far down the road in the playoffs. But are you worried about anybody?
The only team I really think is likely – not likely. The only team I think has a significant chance to lose this round is the Lakers. And I would not have said that before game one, but their offense remained so terrible that I'm starting to believe Rajon Rondo and Avery Bradley were worth a lot more than I thought, just because of what they do for LeBron and Anthony Davis. Not because either of them are so good offensively, but Avery Bradley is at least a ball handler you have to pay attention to, and Rondo is someone who can take the offense initiation off of LeBron, you know? And they don't have any good defensive players without Avery Bradley anyway, so Rondo's not really making the defense worse, even though he barely tries. Just like having someone besides LeBron to bring the ball up matters. But I kind of still think they'll figure it out and win the series. So, yeah, I do think they'll all get through this round. I'm not so worried about the Clippers yet because they're almost by design still figuring stuff out, which is weird and maybe reckless, but I still think they'll figure it out in time to be the best team each step of the way. I'm off the Bucks, and I think I'm off the Lakers too, and I wouldn't be surprised if they both lose next round.
Wow.
I think
I'm still on the Bucks. I think the Bucks will figure it out.
Boy.
I'm not worried about the Clippers at all. I'm very comfortable with the Clippers.
Yeah, me too. I think the Lakers have a real chance to lose next round, although, you know, neither the Thunder nor Rockets look like the biggest threat. I think there's this Lakers team, unless something changes, has no shot against the Clippers.
I would agree with that.
And then as far as the East goes, if the Bucks don't improve a lot, they can't beat the Heat. I believe that strongly.
Yeah, look, they got to get better. There's no doubt they can't play like they played in game one. But I do think that they will figure it out. I'm not that worried about them long term. Although, man, I still like this Raptors team a lot. I think this Raptors team is really good.
They're really good. And I just don't know if I mean, I am still not over the idea that you need a top 15, probably better, a top 10 player, someone who can really get you a bucket down the stretch. And I don't know if they have that. But look, Fred Van Vliet's done it most of the year. So what the hell do I know?
Yeah. And it's like, it's weird. Like, they, to me, they are that Rasheed Chauncey Billups Pistons team. You know what I mean?
But they don't even have a Rasheed. No one on this team is a bucket getter like Rasheed or Chauncey, really.
No, but they just have
Lowry's a little like Chauncey.
Step up and make winning plays. That's what exactly. It's like Lowry's like Chauncey. You know what I mean? Like Siakam is your Rasheed. Granted, he's not as good as Rasheed.
He's neither as good nor the same, like. Siakam's awful tough, though. Look, I don't want to diss the Raptors because they have the best coach in the league.
Marc Gasol coming around who are like they're not like, okay, I can go to this guy every time and you know, down the stretch. But they're all guys who are like, if I need a bucket, they're all capable of getting you a bucket. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I also, like, Nick Nurse is the if there was a coach draft, he's the first guy I would take right now.
That seems to be the consensus.
He's remarkable what he does. And I'm going to double name drop here because we had our friend Cassidy Hubberth on the show, on the radio show yesterday, and she's in the bubble, and she did the first Toronto Brooklyn game. And one of the stories she got talking to the guys on the team is that, you know, Nick Nurse will literally in a huddle be like, hey, so I just thought of this. You guys want to try this? It might be a little weird, but here's this weird idea. And they just trust him so much that they'll do whatever. And, like, I don't think there's a lot of coaches, first of all, who change anything significant mid-game. But also, like, there are not a lot of teams, and this is part of the benefit of not having that sort of superstar biggest guy in the room. There are not a lot of teams that are just going to go with it.
Yeah. Well, I think organizationally, right? Like, they're just an organization with total buy-in, you know? And I do think the rules are a little bit different for them. I get it. They're not like, I completely get they're not the mold necessarily for what you look at when you look at a championship team.
Yeah.
And it's sort of easy to dismiss the, you know, the championship that they won last year because their best player's not there anymore.
Yep.
But you look at the games that they played without their best player last year, they were really good.
They are a really good team.
Of work with of them being good this year. So
no doubt. I think they deserve the respect they're getting right now. And look, I would pick them to beat the Bucks right now. No question. I don't even think the Bucks are going to get that far.
And I think you got to pick Toronto to beat the Celtics at this point too, with Hayward's injury yesterday, I think. So,
I want to see the rest of this Philly series because the level the Celtics took it to yesterday after going down early, I think that's a level that could win the East.
Interesting. I think that Philly's just a mess.
Philly is a mess, but Boston has
the Boston gauges here.
They got a lot of guys. I mean, Gordon Hayward is the fourth best player on that team right now. Right?
Yeah. But that's the other thing you'd say about Toronto too, right? They got a lot of guys. Also, you could say about Milwaukee as well. But
I don't know that you can't. I mean, I thought you could. I don't know. I don't. I just don't like anything that I've seen from Milwaukee.
I'm a Coach Bud fan in general, but I'm not loving that he has not trimmed their rotation a little bit.
Well,
you know,
and,
like they,
and there's something about guys like Bud where they consistently overperform in the regular season and underperform in the postseason. And part of that, I think, is that they're getting guys to play above their heads in the regular season. And, you know, the nature of postseason play is that they come back to earth a little bit. But I do think there's something to it.
Yeah, I don't know. I think it's an interesting test for Bud. I think some of that may be a little bit like, you know, yeah, those the Hawks team that, you know, won 67 games, I don't think, or whatever it was that they won, that finished first in the East. I were a lot of people picking that team to make the finals that year? I don't think they were, right? And you know, yeah, maybe the Bucks team last year, you can look at and say they underperformed, but I'm not sure that it's his fault that Eric Bledsoe went into a coma. You know what I mean? So,
no, I'm not blaming him per se. If anything, I'm saying it's his fault that Eric Bledsoe played at a level throughout the regular season that they were able to win that much.
Yeah.
I think, I think you're right that people were not predicting that team to win. And I think the difference, obviously, is Giannis. That team didn't have a star of this level. And I feel like Giannis might skew the measurements a little bit, because while he is spectacular and the deserving back-to-back MVP, he's also limited in some very specific ways that hurt you in the playoffs.
Yeah, could be.
And and for what it's worth, down the stretch of close games where they didn't look good throughout the bubble.
Yeah. Now, I think this is going to be a real measuring stick for Giannis, because he's going to win the MVP, right?
Yeah.
So.
Yep.
You know, if we look up and you've got a two-time MVP who hasn't played in the finals, people are going to start to poke holes in that. You know,
I agree.
I mean? There's only Nat Steve Nash, the only one that's ever done that. So, you know, there'll be some real Giannis questions, I think, should the Bucks not at least get to the finals this year.
Agreed. And if we don't call it and move on to homework now, we won't possibly be able to call this short.
Okay. I'm ready for that. And homework's going to be short, right? Because there's nothing to watch. Except
nope.
Basketball.
Lots more basketball, a little bit of baseball, and then we had a couple ideas.
Yeah, we got a show for you that's also basketball. It's called Hoops.
Woo!
It's a cartoon
it's
on
cartoon.
Netflix. Starring Jake Johnson, or the voice of Jake Johnson.
Uh-huh. Natasha Leggero.
Yes. People were fans of.
Right.
Reviews have been mixed, so we're not promising you that this will be great.
Have they been mixed?
But yeah, you're right. Most of them have been bad. But
we're going to check it out.
Greatness, but I think we're promising you that it will be tough to watch. So we'll jump on that. And then there is an HBO reality dating, maybe
yep.
swinging show. We're not entirely sure.
Let's get weird.
Called Singletown on HBO Max. We're down to check that out too.
That's homework plus the playoffs, and we're still under an hour, so nice short episode. Bye.
This game's in the Admiral refrigerator. The door is closed, the lights out. Butter's getting hard, the eggs are cooling, and the jello is jiggling.
So long, everybody.
And do me a favor, have yourself a tremendous evening.
Yay.